This is News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox in for Farai Chidea. Hip-hop and violence have long walked hand in hand. The ghosts of Tupac and Notorious B.I.G. have inspired a generation of young rappers for better and for worse. Both men were consummate artists in the prime of their careers, but they also helped change the game, infusing it with a deadly mystique. Just 2 weeks ago, in fact, up-and-coming rapper Raymond Elliott, a.k.a. Stack Bundles, was murdered outside his home in New York. Then late last week, a suspect in the murder was also found dead. His name, Charles White. His vocation? Aspiring rapper. As part of our month-long series on hip-hop, today we look at the way hip-hop and violence are intertwined. In a few minutes, we'll be talking with rap icon Master P in studio here about his conversion from gangster rapper to good guy. But let's start with a look at the history and backstory of hip-hop. William Jelani Cobb is an associate professor of history at Spelman College and the author of To the Break of Dawn. And also with us is Professor Michael Datcher. He teaches English and journalism at Loyola Marymount University here in California and is the author of The New York Times bestseller, Raising Fences. Gentlemen, nice to have you on the show.
It's a pleasure to be
here.
Thank you.
It's good to be here.
First, I'd like to play something for you. It's a clip from rapper The Game's single, Scream On 'Em. A note to listeners. Now, while we're going to keep this as clean as we possibly can, we may still hear a word or even an idea that you personally may perhaps find offensive. Though, with that said, let's hear the clip.
Clean, mean, rapping machine, red rag hanging low in the back of my jeans. I black out like February, back out what's necessary. 07 Bugatti with Jimmy Iovine secretary. I'm running the building, don't make me run in the building. No, this ain't the first time I had my gun in the building. Walking past offices, I see my son in the building. Last album on the wall, I'm number one in the building. They should build me an office.
So Michael, let me start with you. Is it too simplistic to say that the rise of violent lyrics, by the way, again, that was popular West Coast rapper The Game rapping Scream On 'Em from last year's album Doctor's Advocate. Now, back to you, Michael. Is it too simplistic to say that the rise of violent lyrics and rap music began on the West Coast 20 years ago with groups like Compton's N.W.A. and that it was a direct response, by that I mean in competition with, a very different style among East Coast rappers?
Well, I think, first of all, you have to look at the fact that violence is quintessentially American. Even a cursory look at popular culture today in any type of manifestation, whether it be film, the current Saw series, for example. I mean, one could examine any type of cultural production and look at violence in a given subject matter. Certainly, the West Coast had a different style of hip-hop. It popularized kind of an urban or a gangster rap style, which seemed to give young black men primarily a chance to talk about what was happening in their neighborhoods. But too often, I think people are quick to label gangster rap as this as the one medium where violence is dominant, where actually, in our culture, pretty much every major cultural production that we have in America has a certain strain of violence.
Yeah, that's true. We want to pursue that more. Let me bring Jelani into the conversation. Perhaps we should define terms here.
Indeed.
Gangster rap and hip-hop are not one and the same. And if you think of hip-hop, let's say, as a wide-open umbrella, then underneath it you'll find all sorts of musical styles, including gangster rap, Dirty South, many more that have different names. But gangster rap is one of the oldest styles, and it seems to generate the most controversy, not in any small way, Michael, because of what you just said. But Jelani, what continues to drive gangster rap's popularity?
Well, there are a number of things that continue to drive it, mainly being, I agree with Michael's point here, the American fascination with violence. And so it's the same reason that gangster movies have been so popular for so long. When you look at the two most predominant staples in American popular culture, written largely, they are the gangster movie and the Western. And both of those genres center on individuals who can use violence as a means of negotiating situations and negotiating life. And so hip-hop is part of that same tradition. And so we see that it's not so much being driven by, you know, what the participants in the culture are seeking after or admiring in the music, but it's being driven by the larger public. And so when they did the survey, Bakari Katwana and also some people at the University of Illinois, Chicago, did this survey a few months back where they polled all these thousands of black youth, and they found that they actually were turned off by the amount of violence in hip-hop. And so it's not something that's solely internal. It's much more about the broader public as well as the industry that produces the music.
Let me follow up on that point with you, Jelani, and Michael, feel free to jump in on this also, because you made an interesting point. Violence in this country did not begin with rap music, although rap gets blamed for a lot of the behavior of young people, suggesting here, as I see it, that there's a presumption that the people who follow this music are in some way more susceptible to acting out what is meant to be entertainment. What about that? How much do fans of rap music actually mimic what they see and hear, and not just in their clothing, Jelani?
Well, I think what you see is kind of a chicken and egg effect. It's simplistic to say that hip-hop is the reason for violence in the community. And one of the most salient points about that is that when gangsta rap was at its zenith, when it was at its most popular point in the mid-1990s, black youth violence rates were plummeting. And so it's not a clear one-to-one correlation. That said, we do know that the music probably does influence people's behavior on some level. But it's much more important to look at, the background. What are the educational opportunities? What are the employment opportunities? What's going on within the social fabric of the community itself? And so we then, as opposed to looking at those difficult and possibly intractable issues, we just turn around and say, well, it's the music. If they just stop talking about these things and the music, we won't have this problem.
So, Michael, the music really does have an effect?
I think it does have an effect. But if you look at the West Coast in particular, there's a thriving underground hip-hop scene here on the West Coast, here in L.A., for example, where young men are talking about politics, progressive issues. But those particular types of songs, those artists can't get signed by larger labels. And most rappers, indeed, are artists in a way, and they want to also kind of fulfill their dreams, and they want to get the major deal. But right now, the gangster rap particular idiom is what's making money. It's a safer bet for larger corporate labels. And so folks who are progressive have a harder time getting signed. Isn't that folks in urban communities aren't talking about politics, culture, family, health, love, but those stories aren't getting through because they're less of a home run in terms of signing an act which is going to make a gold record.
Well, explain this for me. Either you guys are both scholars and you study this area. Why is it okay that The Sopranos was one of the most popular television shows ever? People were getting popped on that show several times a night every week. But when 50 Cent poses on a billboard with a gun, there's this uproar. Explain that.
What's because
well,
the of
reason,
the...
Yeah, okay,
go ahead, Jelani, you first, and then Michael.
Oh, I was going to say, I think that people don't get scared of James Gandolfini when they see him walking down the street. And that's what is at stake here. When you see 50 Cent on the billboard with a gun, you actually believe, well, 50 Cent, that's a different example.
Okay.
But when you see the average rapper on a billboard, he actually does conjure up this long history of intimidation and all the things that are written on the black male body, whereas with James Gandolfini, it's just a role that he's playing.
Yeah, please go. But also, I mean, most folks who are non-black folk, for example, don't really have a lot of African-American folk in their lives in an intimate, real way. And their experience with black people happens to be through pop culture. So they may know black people only through 50 Cent, through Snoop Dogg, or seeing black men with their arms tied behind their back on some cop show. However, they have many and a much more broader interaction with white folk, for example. So they can see a gangster who's a mafioso on TV who can be a bad guy, but also know 45 other Italians who were progressive or positive figures as well.
Well, it's an interesting point because you mentioned James Gandolfini, the star of The Sopranos, and people know that he's an actor playing a role. And yet, when it comes to gangster rappers, oftentimes people don't see them playing a role. They see them being who they portray themselves to be. How much of that is actually sort of false bravado, would you say, on the part of the rappers who hold themselves out to be gangsters when in reality they're not that at all?
Well, these guys are trying to find and fit into a very narrow definition of manhood. And in areas with depressed economies, the avenues to quote-unquote manhood are much more limited. So historically, a man is defined as being able to provide for one's family, protect one's family, own a home, be a breadwinner. But in many urban depressed economic neighborhoods, those avenues aren't as easily easily accessible. And so being a man gets narrowed down to being able to dominate someone physically or being a sex symbol or a sexually adventurous person. And hip-hop, at least gangster rap, allows men to approach that particular avenue, and they do.
You know, that's a good segue. Let me first say that you're listening to NPR's News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox, sitting in for Farai Tadjaya. This is another episode of our month-long series on hip-hop, and joining me for a discussion about violence and about role-playing and gender issues, which we are going to get to in just a second, is Professor Michael Datcher. He teaches English and journalism at Loyola Marymount University here in California. He is the author of the New York Times bestseller, Raising Fences. And we are also joined by Jelani Cobb, who is William Jelani Cobb is an associate professor of history at Spelman College in Atlanta and the author of To the Break of Dawn. So, Jelani, because you are on a campus of all females, let's talk about hip-hop and the females. And we know that there was some incident, I don't know exactly how long ago, involving Nelly and some of the women on your campus who felt that they didn't like the way they were being portrayed and attempted to have a dialogue with him, and it sort of fell apart. What happened?
Right. That was 3 years ago, but there have been ongoing efforts, and it's one of the things I'm most proud of as a faculty member is that the students have continually raised the issue of how black women are represented within this culture.
But, Jelani, I apologize. I'm looking at my clock wrong, and we have another guest that I have to get in here. Excuse me for cutting you off that way, but Master P is in the studio, and we need to get him in to have part of this discussion. So I'll ask you guys to just sit tight. I'm going to get him to come in now and join us as best we can. Come on in. Again, my apologies to you guys. I knew I was supposed to do that, and I didn't handle it
not
correctly.
A problem,
Master
not a problem.
P, thank you for coming in. I apologize.
Make room for Master P.
You got to make room for the man.
That's the rule. Make room.
Absolutely.
Right.